Welcome to Traffica Europe Radio, Europe's literary radio station, free online. My name's Clayton McKee, and I'm pleased to be back with you this week to present your latest episode, a conversation between host Joe Williams and Irish author Mara Zeff and publisher author Michael Oknula to talk about Zeff's young adult verse novel, Noenin, or Daisy in English translation. Before we get into the episode, I wanted to remind everyone about our membership on patreon.com/trafficeurope. There we've been keeping up with our literary excerpt readings for our audiobook listeners, as well as literary news and possibilities for any of our members. All proceeds go to supporting Traffica Europe, which is a nonprofit organization that runs thanks to members like you. In addition to that, I have very exciting news to announce that our latest issue, Essential New Literature of Lesser-Known Languages of Europe, is now available in print publication. You can find a link to purchase the bilingual publication at www.trafficaeurope.org. It's located on our homepage. You can check out an excerpt from Noenin, featured in this week's episode, in the issue itself, either in the print version that's now available or free online. I placed a link in the show notes for you to find it easily. Now let's get into today's episode. Joe Williams, a Traffica Europe veteran, began this interview by asking Mara and Michael to introduce themselves.
Thanks, Joe, and thanks for having me here. I'm Mara Zeff, and I write in Irish for children and young people. So I have written 16 books to date, lots of them picture books, but three chapter books, and also young adult, which is, I guess, what we're going to be talking about today.
And I'm Michael Oknula from Connemara in the Galway Gaeltacht. It's on the west coast of Ireland. The Gaeltacht is an Irish-speaking area, so I grew up speaking Irish and actually remember not being able to speak English, which I think wouldn't happen nowadays. I'm in my 60s, so I've been around for some time, a writer and a publisher. I started Chloe Arconnacht, a publishing company, about 37 years ago, and was running that until quite recently, although I still helped them with some projects. So now I'm concentrating on my own writings. I have written maybe about 20 books, mostly short stories, some novels, novellas, some drama, history books, and I've edited books like song books, etc.
Great, thank you both so much. As Mara alluded to in her introduction, there's a specific work we'll be focusing on in this interview, and that is a younger adult novel for the YA demographic written by Mara, originally in Irish Gaelic and also translated by Mara into English. And this work is very niche and quite unique in a lot of ways, in that it's a novel for young adults written in verse in Irish Gaelic and translated by the author into English. So it's got a lot of idiosyncrasies. Could you start by introducing and explaining a little bit more about the work itself, which is in English, Irish language called Noenin, is it?
Noenin, yes.
And in English it's been translated as Daisy. You could talk a little bit about the title to begin with, because there's a certain double meaning in the title, I think, isn't there?
Noenin, it's funny that in terms of translation, this was one of the headaches I had in translating the book, because her name is Noenin in Irish, which means Daisy, but that's not a normal name. You wouldn't normally be called Noenin in Irish, whereas in English, Daisy is quite a common name. But YA novel, as you say, and it's written in verse, it's written in free verse. And this is a genre that I really love reading myself. And it's interesting, you say it's niche, and it is, but I think for teenagers nowadays, it'll be less niche than you think. That this is a form of writing that has really taken off. And so the reason I decided to write it was actually because of how much I was enjoying reading this form myself. I was reading authors like Sarah Crossan and Dean Atta and Elizabeth Acevedo, if I've said her name right, lots of different authors who were writing for young people in this style. And it was just a style that packed a punch that I was not reading in other forms. And so the more I read of it, and it's very quick to read, it's very accessible. It's like writing with all the fat taken out. It's very pared down, but it makes it very very fast to read and very direct to read. It's great for expression of emotion and difficult themes. But the more I was interested in the genre, the more I read then that also that it was having a real effect on young people, this style, because reluctant readers were enjoying it. People who, you know, very often in the teenage years, people who have been avid readers from childhood stop reading. Other things take over. But this was a form that was pulling teenagers back in and working in some way with their brains and mine that was extremely effective. I thought for me, reading as an Irish language author, you always, I think, can't help but think about the spaces, the voids in the canon. You think, we don't have a book like this in Irish. And I don't think that's what happens to an English language author, for example, when they're reading books. They go, oh, this already exists. Whereas when you read stuff in Irish, you think, we don't have this. And the more I thought about it, I thought, this is something that we need more than anyone, because we'll have all of those issues of this age group and reading. But we have extra ones as well, where lots of these kids will want to read in English rather than in Irish, partly because of the choice and range of books that they might find. But also, they might find it easier or simpler, or it might be cooler, or whatever the thing is. Anyway, this is a long, rambling way in, but this was my reason for wanting to write in this form, first of all. But the theme that I chose is a really dark and difficult one, but it's about online grooming. And that came from living in a house full of teenagers. And actually from hearing them dismiss the safety advice they were given at school, because it was being delivered to them with pure fear. It was like, don't do this, avoid this. And the more I listened to this, the more I realized that there was a different way of having that conversation. And this is not, the intention of the book was not to deliver a message to children to be safe. Like, it's very definitely not intended to be preaching to them in that way, but a conversation about who we are in the world, how vulnerable we are in the world, and how to have trust and skepticism simultaneously in our online and real world relationships. But it's a story that's told from the viewpoint of Nonin, or Daisy. And half of the book is written from her perspective, and the other half of the book is written by her friend, Erin, and after Daisy has gone missing. So not to give too many things away, but that's essentially the format of the book.
Okay, thank you, Myra, for that introduction. Yes, I had absolutely no idea that young adult novel in verse was an established form. I had no idea that young adults were reading in verse. When I was that age, when I was a teenager, I probably wouldn't have read novels in verse. Interesting. Let's pass it over now to Michael. And could you perhaps talk to us about your impression of the book, how you first came into contact with it, and what attracted you to it?
Well, I'm always looking out for good book, obviously good fiction. When I read books, I am thinking as a publisher, of course. And you said, I think you don't read teenage fiction. As a publisher, I can be a kid or a teenager because I have to read all these books for all ages. But of course, as Maurice said, this book was published first by Kushlife, and Quillen Nifoyin there and Sean were resigning, and they talked to us about taking over the company, which we did about maybe three or four years ago. And this book, of course, was on the book list. So that's how I came across this book. And as Maurice said, there aren't books like this in Irish written in verse. And I was very interested and excited about the book. And of course, I'm trying to get the book published in other languages. And there's already a Korean edition published of the book. Because I think it's a book that will travel far. But about books in Irish, there would be, I think, about maybe 140 books maybe published in the Irish language or the Gaelic language every year. Maybe 40 of them might be for kids and teenagers. So that's the quantity we are talking about. So it is a niche market. Sales can be pretty small. It could be anything from 300 or 400 copies to 1,000 copies, and 1,000 copies would be regarded as a bestseller. So in the Irish language, about the books for children and teenagers, I would say maybe about half of them would be, maybe a third, maybe original Irish language writing. So the other maybe two-thirds would be translated from other languages. In our book company, we translate from the Dutch, from the Welsh, from German, from different languages, also from English into Irish, which sell quite well, actually, because the kids might be familiar with the books in English already and the characters, but they have to read about them in Irish as well. So that is where I'm coming from, thinking as a publisher and trying to bring new and interesting and exciting things to Irish language readers. And as we keep saying, if a book's in Irish, it nearly has to be better than a book in English, because in Ireland, we're swamped with books in English from Ireland, but also from the UK on one side and the US on the other side. So that's a big world. And like, for example, I think 70% of the books sold in Ireland are imports. They are from US or US, UK mostly, about 70%. So the English language publishers are fighting for a space on bookshelves for the Irish produced English books. And it's tough for them. So you can imagine how tough it is for Irish language publishers to get books, which is a niche market at the end of the day, into the bookshelves and in circulation. We find it exciting when a book like this comes along that's as good and better than most books published in English. And that was proved, of course, when we got the Book of the Year Award, I think 3 or 4 years ago now, which is the first time ever an Irish language book won this award. So that's what something that all Irish language writers, publishers, people celebrated, and rightly so.
Thank you. Yeah, fascinating to have that insight into the demands on Irish language authors and publishers, the difficulties and the challenges of getting books to readers, like you say, among quite a small number of readers, and that necessitates quite a high level of quality. You can't just publish any old thing. And based on what I've heard about this book and what I've read about this book, it seems like it does several things. It achieves several things. It's formally successful, it's in verse, but then, as you alluded to, Myra, it deals with some quite serious and heavyweight issues. So it's not lightweight, it's not throwaway. Now, it redefines your expectations of what young adult literature might be capable of being, formally quite accomplished and original, and also dealing with very contemporary issues from a smaller language like Irish. This is quite an unexpected work. I was very startled to learn about this work. And it, of course, received recognition. It won the Book of the Year, as Mikhail said, 20, I think. Anyway, instead of me rabbiting on about it, let's hear something from the book then. Myra, could we hear you read something from the original Irish language version, Nonin, so that listeners can hear how Irish Gaelic sounds and how the original sounds, and then we can hear something, the corresponding English translation.
Okay, yes, I'll start off with the Irish then, Joe. Cailín suscahan. Is mise Nonin. Chú comanta leis an bhla. Ba bhailim bhé króga, callanach, crackalcha. Ba bhrálam bhé finn, fecalach, fian. No dullaba, dana, dainsirach. Ach nílam, cuig blian na jéag dís, as chó comanta le nóníní. So I'll read that for you in English, and maybe a little bit more. Okay. The way verse novels are structured, I never know whether to call them poems or chapters, but it's written in very short sort of fragments. So the first one's called Girl in the Mirror. I am Daisy, as ordinary as the flower. I'd like to be brave, brash, bonkers. I'd love to be feisty, fierce, free. Or blonde, bold, bad. But I'm not. 15 years old and as ordinary as daisies. 2. I don't like school. According to the science teacher, everything on Earth is made of atoms. Metal, wood, plants, everything. Even ourselves, made of teeny tiny invisible atoms. But she's wrong. At school, everything is made of rules, especially the teachers. take Mrs. Clark, the gearhead, for example. If she cut herself, bleeding painfully, she would drip rules, not blood. She opens her mouth and out shoots a barrage of complaints, threats, orders. Don't wear your skirt like that. Don't walk here. Don't wear makeup. Don't talk to me like that. Don't run. Don't leave your bag there. Don't bother, says Erin. As long as I have Erin, everything is okay. I might just read you a little section from later on. It's just one that's a little bit different. This is number 6, a cup of tea. Knock, knock on my bedroom door. Mum, tea in hand for me. A cup that says, welcome home from school. And, is everything all right? And, I'd like to check you're not on your phone instead of doing your homework. So you can see that some of the chapters, if you could call them that, are extremely short, but it's a lovely way to write because it's so freeing that you can write a long section where there's the plot is unfolding, but you can also just write little moments and little thoughts as they come.
Great, thank you so much. You just heard Myra Zepp reading from her young adult novel in verse, Nonin, in Irish language, followed by the corresponding English translation, translated as Daisy in English. Thank you so much for reading. One interesting dimension to this work is that it's a self-translation from Irish into English. And Mikhail, I understand that you also will have some extensive experience with this process of translating between Irish and English and self-translation. Do you have any thoughts or comments on that?
Oh, I have lots of thoughts and comments. I could talk all day about this topic. First of all, as a former publisher, I'm aware of the small number of readers we have in the Irish language, but I'm also aware that we have writers in Irish who are as good as those who write in English in Ireland, or indeed most other countries. So part of our mission always was to bring these great books and these good writers, great writers, to a bigger audience. And the way you do that is through translations. I go to the Frankfurt Book Fair every year, for example, and the London Book Fair. Frankfurt is the biggest in the world, it's on every October. And there you meet publishers from all over the world. The first problem is, of course, they don't read Irish. They're not going to buy, as they say, a pig in a poke. They're not going to buy something that they just can't read, obviously. At the odd time, they might buy a novel or book on recommendation from somebody who they would really trust, etc. But in general, every publisher wants to be able to read a book, or at least a few chapters of the book before they make the big decision of investing money and time into a French or a German or whatever language. To get over that, I recommend it to many writers. Could you translate a few chapters of your book at least? Or if you want to do more of it, up to you. So sometime I've done that. And another thing is, of course, Maura did her own translation. But many writers would not be comfortable maybe or want to translate their own work. I would never, for example, translate my own work into English, because it's my second language and I'm a native Irish speaker and my Irish is much better than my English. And I feel I wouldn't be able to express myself as good in English as I am in Irish. And the other problem I would see, and I don't know whether Maura had this or not, but she did her own translation, is I would probably, when I write a short story, for example, I go through it 30 or 40 times and rewrite and go back and delete words and paragraphs, etc. And I felt if I was going to translate my story into English, I might start rewriting it all over again or making changes, etc. As a translator, you don't do that, of course, without the permission of the author. I've translated people like plays by Simon Beckett and Martin McDonagh and Liam O'Flaherty and short stories into Irish. So you have the text. It's like a roadmap. You just follow that and stick with it. But if you are translating your own work, there is a danger maybe that you will start changing things, rewriting things, working again on something you felt you had finished already. And sometimes there might be an argument for that. There might not. But it might open it up to a whole new debate in your own mind. What do I do now? So as I said, part of our mission is to bring these books to the bigger world. And preferably if a book is being translated into, let's say, into French or German, we would prefer that to be done from the Irish. The best known book in Irish language with Cian na Cile, which has been translated into English by both Tim Robinson, Lima Cunimura, and Alan Titley, the two English translations. That is the, and that is being translated into maybe 15, 16 other languages. Three or four of them were translated directly from the Irish, especially to the major languages like German, etc. And we would always try to get some Irish speaker who would maybe speak Portuguese or Spanish or whatever language being translated into. But sometimes there's no choice. If there's to be a translation, it has to be done from the English. So it is not 100% satisfactory, but I would say I would rather have it there, or else wait maybe another 20, 30, 40 years until somebody who speaks, let's say, Irish and Latvian or some maybe lesser known language comes along to do a book into Estonian or Latvian or whatever. It's a slow process. It's complicated. It's interesting. But it's also very exciting to hear people from around the world say how much they enjoyed your book and how much your book traveled well and was well received in other languages. For example, I remember once meeting a Lithuanian publisher who did one of our books, and she was really excited about one of my own short stories, saying, "Oh, these characters, I really like them because I know my readers will like them because they are like people from our country." So it was very refreshing to hear that the people in the countryside there would be very much like the people in Connemara who I was writing about. So that's the good thing about literature. It can travel in general. And it's nice to get a reaction like that from people around the world. I'm sure those who write in English get this every day, the writers who write in English, because even people from the major countries that English is not their first language, they probably read in English. So in general, as a publisher, and indeed as a writer, but mostly as a publisher when I was doing this work, it is interesting to bring this to other readers around the world. Some of the posts, like Mugun, for example, Kahalo Sharkey, Michael Lavin, they would be maybe in 8, 9, 15 different languages. Several of our other books have been translated to many languages as well. And we hope this book, Nonin Ardesi, will gradually, you know, make its way into several other languages in the years to come.
Moving over to you now, Myra, staying on this same topic of translation between Irish and English and self-translation, is there any aspect of this you'd like to comment on or respond to?
Yeah, lots of things. It's really interesting to me to hear Michal's perspective, because my own experience is probably very different and shaped by where I live. Michal lives in the Gaeltacht and I live in what we call the Gaeltacht, which is an English-speaking area. So I was brought up speaking Irish as my first language and my home language. But the wash of English and Irish has always been going in both directions all around me in a really different way. So I have lots of hats on in answering this question. I have had my own books translated, and my books have been translated to 10 different languages, and I've seen them go around the world. I've always provided an English translation to go with them, and that's what they're translated from. But there's just a sense in which once it gets bought to go to China, Korea, Spain, wherever it goes, all these different countries, once that happens, you have no idea how they translate your work. I have no way in to knowing what it is that they did with it from that point on, which is a strange feeling. And that isn't just to do with languages, it's also to do with countries. Like I have one of my books in America in English, but it needed to be translated to from our English to their English. And even there was all sorts of conversations about humour and how it travels and things that got changed that aren't necessarily what I would have wanted, but what needed to happen for that market. So I have an experience that way around, but I'm also a translator of books and TV. So I started translating through TV. And what was happening was TV companies were coming to me and saying, "We've got this work that we want to get dubbed for children, and we can find all these amazing translators who can translate it perfectly, but it's not into child-friendly language." So there was a really interesting thing about the register, and so I thought, okay, I can do this. I do know how to write for children. I know what the right level is and the right playfulness and how to invent words when we need them or whatever was required by those things. So that gave me a bit of confidence in doing it. But the really interesting thing for me is that even my book, all of my books have started in Irish. But lots of those, particularly the picture books, I'm working with illustrators who don't speak Irish. Or in the case of TV, when I'm writing TV, I'm working with TV production companies who don't speak Irish. So I'm constantly living in two versions of my text, where I write it in Irish, I translate it for the illustrator, I get that, but it's like a constant kind of, so I've by necessity become really used to switching back and forward. And as Michal says, that changes it. Every time you do that, it changes it. But I love that thing, and I can't remember who it was who wrote it, but about translation being writing something twice, that when you receive a text and you translate, that you're writing it again. So there's a polish or a next level. You go deeper into the language, bizarrely, when you translate than you do when you write. When I was writing Nonin, it was just like coming up. When you're translating it, you're going, oh goodness, that could mean this and this, and that, even of your own text. But the thing that I hold on to is that the thing that you need to translate is not, so meaning is obviously essential, but in something like this book, I just kept coming back to, what is the feeling? Like, what is the feeling that the reader should have when they read this part? And if I need to write it differently or a little bit differently here to have that feeling, that's what I'm actually needing to communicate. So it's stepping back from the words and saying, it's about the reader response, really. Like, what's the tone? What's the mood? As much, because sometimes a word in Irish that has a certain mood, its translated word will have a different mood. And so this is where I love being self-translated, because I have the permission, I have all of the author's permission to change those words, to change that phrase, to actually say something else, because I want to get that feeling across rather than that meaning across. Because I know that it didn't matter, that I could have written that in, I could have put lots of different things in there, but I chose that thing because it was to land in a certain way. And so I can free myself into knowing that I can do that. When you're translating other people's work, you're within a box, and it's such a respectful thing to do. How far can you push a change in something without turning it into something else? But it's like the box doesn't exist. And I can see exactly what Michal meant, that then is that infinite? When there's no box around you, do you keep on changing? So that was a really interesting process. And the bizarre thing with this book was that I also needed to actually change bits of the plot, almost. Not in really major ways, but there's the whole way in which Daisy meets Shay online that had a logic that was to do with the fact that her name was clearly delineating her as an Irish speaker. So in the Irish version, this is why her guard is down, because he immediately recognizes from her name that she's an Irish speaker, speaks to her in Irish, and that's their way into each other. And that's not something I could do in English, so I had to write it differently. There was some genuinely really kind of complex things like that to figure out, but mostly I just felt kind of free free to not have to worry about what the author thinks.
At this point in the conversation, perhaps it would be interesting now to talk about the history and the development of Irish language literature, how it's evolved and developed over the past few decades, what its foundational text might be, what the current state of it is. As somebody with a wealth of experience in publishing and writing in Irish language, I'm sure you've got some interesting comments to make about this.
Yeah, well, about Irish literature, as somebody who's been involved in publishing the last 30-40 years, I'm pleased with the progress. I'm pleased with the amount of people writing, even though book sales are quite limited. I would estimate there might be about between 300 and 400 writers writing in Irish at the moment. Now, by a writer, I mean anybody who's written a book, and that would include academic writers, professors, as well as novelists, doctoral writers, poets, writers for teenagers, etc., and children. And at the moment, I would estimate there would be about maybe 2.5 Irish language books in print. at any given time. Irish language books, also maybe some of them might be bilingual books like poetry. We have lots of bilingual titles. And at any given moment, I think that is quite good. The literature at the moment, I think, is of quite a high quality. There are many good poets writing in Irish, lots of prose writers. Last century, or beginning of the last century, the major poets were Máirtín Ó Gearán, Seán Ó Riordan, and Máire Ó Bhacatha. And then with the intergeneration in the 70s, another generation came along, like Michael David, Nolan Irónal, Liam O'Murdy, Gabriel Rostock, Cathal Ó Sharkey. And about the prose writers, we have the likes of Pádraic Branagh, Alan Titley, who's a wonderful prose writer, and short stories, novels, plays, etc., and many more. Another change is in recent years, there are more and more women writing fiction, which would not be true when I started publishing 35 years ago. There were fairly few women writing fiction that time. I remember when we were doing the anthology Gáis Gaolta an Chéad, the best short story from the last century, of 20, 25 stories, it was quite difficult to get very good women writers. People like Annie Youssef, for example, Réalteanna Leanán, Catherine Duffy, Eitní Alhóir. And now we're doing a book of, for example, short stories by women writers. And we'll have at least 6 or 7 who will have 2 or 3 stories each. And I don't think we would have that many 30 years ago of a higher quality. So that I'm pleased about the women poets. We have lots writing and the highest of quality. So in general, I'm looking back as somebody who's been involved in this for the last 40 years. I'm very pleased, actually. And I'm pleased that Irish writing in general at this moment is of a very high quality and just as good as most of those who write in English in Ireland. It's an ongoing, things are never easy with the distribution of books and the small number of readers, etc. But it is, if you are a writer, it's something you believe in. And another thing about is, we were talking before about Gaeltacht writers and non-native writers. I think of the writers at the moment writing, I think maybe 2/3 of them would be people who learned Irish. Irish wouldn't be their first language. For me and the rest of it, the other third would be native Irish speakers. So for the likes of me, it's easy to make a decision to write in Irish. For those who spoke English first, whose English is their first language, they have a decision to make. Why do I write in Irish instead of English? And they all have different reasons. Some of them are enthusiastic about the language. Some of them maybe find an experiment to write in a language that is not their native language. But it doesn't really matter. They're all making this big, interesting, which is very, everybody's all different, contribution to Irish language literature as it is at the moment.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, that's fascinating. And it's very reassuring to hear that it seems to be in quite a healthy condition at the moment. Myra, do you have anything to add? Is there anything you'd like to respond to here on the subject of Irish language literature? I can imagine there might be.
I'd love to jump in on the personal perspective, particularly on children's books in Irish, that when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, I was very lucky to have a father who bought every single Irish language book that was published for us. It wasn't a whole lot of books, and we loved them very much. Lots of them were in translation from different European countries as well, but to the extent that he then felt like there were more books that he wanted us to have. And so he used to just personally translate them for us. So he would find the books he wanted in English. He would either write in Irish on them, or he used to do it on the typewriter and like actually cut out and stick on old fashioned cut and paste onto the books, so that we had Irish language versions of all the fairy tales, all the ladybird books, all of the mythology, but everything that he wanted us to be able to read, he just translated himself. I have met so many people of my generation whose parents were doing the same thing. People sitting at their kitchen tables writing these because they just wanted us to have a word. Even though we grew up in an English language environment, they wanted us to live a life through Irish only, especially in our home environment. It was an entirely sealed, hermetically sealed language environment. But the difference is now that people with young children now who are speaking Irish in the home can't buy every book anymore. It's and so there's a quantity thing, there's a but there's also a quality thing, I think, that these are books then that are going internationally all over the place and being sold in different languages, but that there's a kind of a, I think really a, an enriched environment now for children reading books in Irish. It's been very much helped, certainly in this part of the world, it's been very much helped by the rise of Irish medium education, which is, just if anyone isn't familiar with this sort of immersion education, it's where the parents don't necessarily speak the language, but they send their children to a school where they're taught only through Irish, and themselves become fluent, and everything that they do is through Irish at school. It has transformed the landscape for the language, because it means that we've got all these kids who speak Irish relative to the number of adults. So, but also it is like sort of an engine in the demand for books, and it's a really interesting phenomenon, and certainly in this part of the world it's transforming the demographic of the language. So that's my kind of personal perspective on it. And it's interesting that Michal was talking about people's reasons for writing in Irish. For me, the motivation of that childhood experience of, I think I mentioned it already, the lacks, the missing books, that sometimes when you go to take on, like when I went to write Nonin, I was taking on every kind of challenge. I'd never written for young adults before. I'd never written in verse before. Really, really challenging for me as an author. I think that I might have stumbled and fallen, you know, in terms of my confidence or my ability to cheerlead myself through that process. But the motivation is, if I don't do this, maybe nobody will. That's actually a remarkably powerful motivator, that you want this thing to exist in this language, so you may as well bloom and do it yourself. Because, and it's partly that the Northern Irish speakers have this in spades. We don't expect anybody to be giving us anything. If you want something to exist, you make it yourself. And so when I back to that image of the kitchen table and translating things, we also did that with our board games, with our music books, everything we did, we wanted us in Irish, we do it ourselves. And I think that's really motivating for me, is as well, I might as well give it my best shot, because I want this to exist. Yeah.
Wonderful, great. So it sounds like quite a vibrant, living and very organic kind of do-it-yourself ethos. And interesting what you're saying, that the kind of demographic of Irish speakers now seems to be weighted with higher numbers of younger speakers, which is obviously going to impact and influence the kind of literature and writing that's produced. Maybe we'll start seeing Irish language hip-hop or something like that, I don't know.
We've already got it, Joe.
Right. I've got a lot to learn, obviously. I need to educate myself on this. Before we finish, why don't each of you tell us what you're currently working on, what's in the pipeline? Myra, why don't you carry on? Tell us what you're currently working on.
I have a book currently at the printers, which is always a very exciting moment. And it's the ninth book in my Rita series, which is a picture book series for preschoolers. But my next challenge is I'm writing an anthology of illustrated stories. And it's very complicated to try and explain. So I'll just leave it at that. And the big project that's... So there's always the thing behind you that you've already done, the thing ahead of you that you've still to do. And then the thing that I'm sitting in the middle of is a TV series that I've written that's just taken over my life. But it's... We're calling it Celtic Anime, but it's an animated TV series that is initially going to go out in Irish, Welsh and Scots Gaelic, and we have international distributors for that as well. Aardman Animations are doing our international distribution, so that's a very exciting development for me, and yeah, keeping me extremely busy.
Wow, that's really unexpected. Celtic anime, that sounds wonderful. Okay, I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. Mikhail, why don't you tell us what you're currently working on, what's next for you?
As usual, I'm working on many projects at the same time. That's my style. Normally, I'll be working on maybe four projects on my own, four different books. I'm working on a few plays. I'm working on two short novellas. And I have a poetry collection coming out soon. Also, I'm doing some translations. I'm doing another Beckett play, Not I, which hopefully will be staged next year. And I'll probably do more translations of Liam O'Flaherty's short stories. I'm working on an English translation of my memoir, small memoir about Molly Connor, Nollig Ilanach. That's published last year in Irish. Micheál O'Hay has done the English translation, so I'm just reading through it basically and getting it ready. So hopefully that would be out by this Christmas. So as usual, lots to do, but as some political party said years ago, much more to do yet.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Traffic of Europe Radio. This has been an interview between host Joe Williams and Irish author Myra Zepf, as well as Irish author and publisher Micheál O'Cnila. Take a look at our show notes to read the excerpt of Noinin, or Daisy in English translation, in our latest issue of Traffic of Europe, Essential New Literature of Lesser Known Languages of Europe. I've already mentioned our membership at patreon.com/trafficofeurope, as well as the printed publication of our latest issue, both of which can be found through our website, trafficofeurope.org. I'd like to also mention a few other ways that you can contribute to Traffic Europe. If you're financially able, you can make a one-time donation at our GoFundMe page. The link to that can also be found at our website. Some free ways you can contribute to Traffic of Europe are by liking, commenting, and sharing any of our social media posts, or by rating our podcast on Apple, Google Podcast, Amazon Podcast, Spotify, anywhere where you listen to our show. Our hope is to bring European literature to a wider audience, and we can only keep doing that through our continued collaboration with our listeners, with authors, and with translators from all around the world. Thank you so much for any willingness to collaborate with Traffic of Europe, and thank you even more so for listening to this week's episode. Have a great day.